Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your Cape Crusader Cody, and we're keeping it geekly with our two new guests, Mark O'Stack and Max Pinelli. We're here to break down the Relentless Lark and everything in between. Mark, Max, welcome to the stream. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really nice to be here.
Had the opportunity to read an advanced reader copy, and I love this. This story was phenomenal. Before we break down, what to expect in the Kickstarter, give us a little bit about who you guys are and how you got into creating comics.
Mark, you go first.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very kind of you to throw me under that bus.
You got more experience, I figured.
I got started the way a lot of people do, which is, I liked comic books so much that I decided to write about them a bunch. So I got into comics criticism. I went through a site called Eat Geek Play that is no longer in existence. I don't know how it isn't. It was about food, video games, and comics. Made total sense to put that all together in one spot.
Yeah.
All the food stuff like actually had a lot of crossover, but that went away. I wrote like 5 articles a day for a period of time. Really pumped them out. And that got me going to comic cons and doing shows and meeting people. And then eventually realizing, oh, I would much rather be making my own things than constantly writing essays about other things. Not that that's not valuable, but I just would have more fun that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing like short comics. I worked with a really amazing artist named Sally Cantorino, who is now doing a bunch of stuff with Vault. Like Human Remains with Peter Milligan, which is crazy. And started working with a bunch of people that way, always short comics. And then in about 2019, I took a stab at a longer work, about 48 pages, called The Scent of May Rain. And that did pretty decently well in pre-order. People were like, oh, this is actually a real book. And then I hooked up with a cartoonist named Mike Becker, and we decided to make a comic together. Almost as like an act of improv during the early pandemic, like March 2020, because we were both terrified comic shops were going to go out of business forever and that the entire industry would collapse. I think a lot of us were having those fears at that time when Diamond said, hey, we're not shipping anything anymore.
Yeah.
real nerve-wracking. So we decided to do a last hurrah. So we ended up making like a 52-page first issue of a book called Young Offenders, and it did way too well on Kickstarter, so we ended up doing more. And those also did too well. And here we are today with me and Max here to promote the first real spinoff, three issues, The Relentless Lark.
Now, so you and Max did The Young Offenders together?
I did that with a cartoonist named Mike Becker.
Okay, sorry.
Max is new. He's fresh blood here.
No, I got you. Sorry about that.
Each issue of The Relentless Lark is a different genre. The first issue is action. And I found Max because he was recommended to me by a mutual appreciator named Alex Moore, who was initially going to work on the first issue, but didn't have room in their schedule, and said, hey, this guy, his work is actually too good. For some reason, he's not popping off anywhere yet. So they're like, you should see if you can snag him before he realizes he's too good for you. And I basically did that. So we got Max on the first issue. And the other two issues have different artists to go with the different genres to give them different feels. Those are Kaylee Rowena and Becca Kubrick. But here we're talking about Max. So Max, yeah. I actually want to know more because I don't know much about your cartooning background.
Well, so it started when I was 7 years old. I went to Barnes & Noble with the family, got some Sonic the Hedgehog comics there because I already liked Sonic. I already loved video games.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started like copying the panels and drawing them and then telling my friends that I made it. and then like me and a few other friends started, one of them actually, Hunter Martin, is a relatively big artist too. Yeah, I mean, big as in us little guys, but still like he was in school with me and we would draw comics together and like trade them and stuff in school. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't like actually get into like full on reading comics outside of just, you know, Sonic until I was in middle school. I got super into Batman. And at that point I knew that I wanted to draw comics for a living. You know, at first it was just kind of like I would make art and I always wanted to do like some kind of entertainment thing, but I just drew the comics because it was easy to do as a kid to like grab a bunch of paper and staple it together and then draw it. And it, actually the funny thing is that I would often grab a bunch of paper, stapled together, like, you know, I would guess the length of it, and then I would try to just fill the whole thing, and it actually went better than I thought it would. Then I went to the Academy of Art University in San Francisco for college, and I just, you know, my focus was in comics, and I got to have some pretty cool teachers like Mick Gray, Gary Amaro, like Chuck Pyle, just like some really cool guys. I mean, Chuck wasn't a comic guy, but he was like the head of the illustration department. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of just the philosophy behind art that I can appreciate came from him, which is mostly just at the end of the day, the act of creating in and of itself can be a reward. And I was kind of getting to a point, like after I got out of college, where, I mean, I knew I still wanted to do comics, and I was working on my own called Rage Room. But I didn't know like how reasonable it would be to assume that I could actually make it happen. And like, it's certainly not my full-time job yet or anything, but doing this project was like just a big eye-opener for like the collaborative effort of it. Cause when I was doing Rage Room by myself, writing and coloring and lettering everything on top of doing the artwork, it was like crazy overwhelming for myself to do. Mm-hmm. But then in this situation, it's like there's this great story for me to follow that I can just go along with and just jam it out and draw it. And the cool thing about the process, not to get like too deep into that right off the bat, was just that I felt like there wasn't a way for me to like fall through the cracks, because ultimately I was, not only did I sign the contract and, you know, was getting paid and like had to get it done, mm-hmm. but also just knowing that there was, you know, I was actually talking to Mike Becker through a lot of the process too, you know, the guy who did the Young Offenders work, just to kind of get a sense of the character and stuff. But, you know, the experience was just super fun. I've got other things kind of starting to come up in the works now too. Ooh. That like I'm excited about. I might mention at least like a fellow collaborator that I'll be working with. I can't really say anything of what I'm going to be doing, but you know, it's just, yeah, I guess here I am now in front of you. So,
all right. So
a very condensed version of my history, but yeah.
So I was asking about the Young Offenders, because that actually leads into the Relentless Lark, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah, correct. That's a, so far we've done 3 issues, Mike Becker and I. We intended like each of them to be like 20 pages, but in the scripting and then thumbnails, we were always like, oh, what if we add like a scene here and oh, maybe a scene there. And, you know, we're doing it ourselves. We're not like trying to fit like a monthly schedule. So we had a lot of time. Each one blew up. Like the first issue was 36 story pages and then like a backup. And we ended up doing backups in all of them. The second issue was like 26 pages. The third was 25. When we decided to put out a paperback last year, we ended up adding a new prologue and restructuring it and like adding chapters in at points, which we really rethought how to present it, because we figured more people will eventually read it in paperback than read it in the Kickstarter floppies. But that book is, you know, it's not the most original premise. I mean, heck, a year later, Dark Crisis came out and basically did the same thing. So it was, the premise was like, oh, there's a big like crisis level event. We're not going to get too deep into that, but what we're going to get into are the kids and sidekicks and basically the failures, the fuck ups, the has-beens, you know, everyone who didn't like go pro. They're left on Earth and they are like, all right, I guess we should probably step up and stop being such highly public failures for once in our lives. So it's basically like the overlooked Breakfast Club superhero team thing of young adults. And
the substitute team.
Mike and I just had a lot of fun doing that.
So
what was that, Max?
The substitute teachers.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, the end of the trade paperback issue 3, like what happens into that that catapults us to the Relentless Lark? Anything you could talk about without spoiling?
Yeah, we end with the realization that, you know, this team is finally formally together. They know that the heroes aren't coming back. And our protagonist of the Relentless Lark is a 17-year-old girl named Jane. And her father is the original Lark. You know the type. Dark, brooding, cape. He's got some things on his head.
Years.
And the big reveal is, in whatever crisis-level story they have going on, he's decided, you know what, fuck it. I'm tired of constantly fighting these battles again. I'm just taking over. I'm just going to try to declare myself basically God Emperor of the Universe. And we kind of left on that cliffhanger of like, hey, this father she has a very complicated relationship with has kind of broken bad in a serious way. So we're taking the chance to, before Mike and I get back to wrap up that story, we're giving her a spotlight to really delve into her dysfunctional family, which we hint at a little bit in the first issue, but is really going to come to the forefront towards the end as we get a real sense of what it was like to be raised by maybe the most secretive and demanding person in the world.
Mm-hmm. So where in the timeline does issue one of The Relentless Lark take off?
It's probably about a month later is what it would be. Our series of The Relentless Lark takes place over a three-day weekend because I just love a gimmick. So yeah. The idea is three-day weekend. So each issue is one night of that three-day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just one day at a time. Boom, boom, boom. Where our first issue ends is a pretty brutal handoff for Max to make to our next artist, Kaylee Rowena. She's going to be studying the ramifications of that final fight when drawing Jane's face in the second issue.
Oh, God. It's good, too. It's good. So, Max, how did it feel kind of taking the reins? I mean, did it feel like big shoes to jump into? I mean, did you have any, like, troubles or, you know, tribulations working through it?
Yes. Because Mike Becker is, like, super, super good. And
yeah.
You're pretty good. I mean, don't sell yourself short, man.
So the thing was, you know, I saw that, you know, he was like a professor at SCAD. I almost went to that school also. So that was kind of funny. I was like, oh, he could have ended up being my teacher if I had a different path. I mean, I don't know how long he's been there, so maybe not. I don't know. But
relatively recent.
Yeah. And I just realized I was picking up a character that's been used before that, you know, it's not like she has the history of, like, you know, a DC or Marvel superhero, but, like, there's some history there. And I wanted to do it justice. And it's actually one of the first things I thought when I was reading the script was, you know, I was, like, looking at her design in Mike Becker's style. And I was, like, reading through the script and all, like, the different gadgets and tools she'd be pulling out. And I thought, well, like, I kind of want to, like, tweak that design a little bit to give her a more tactical edge. So I actually asked Mike Becker if I could do that first, because I just wasn't sure. I don't know. And he was like, oh, yeah, you can just do your own thing. It's, like, not a problem. And I'm like, no, I mean, yeah, I just, like, do you like this? Do you think it's cool? And he's like, yeah, it's fucking awesome. Do it. And I was like, okay, yeah. So from that point on, just,
yeah,
like,
I'm going to fucking do it.
throughout the process of drawing it, yeah, I gained more confidence as I went, just knowing that, you know, especially when it comes to, like, indie comics like this, we really have the chance to, like, put our stamp on things. And so I got the opportunity to, like, work with this character that I enjoyed, because, you know, I read the book right before starting on the project. Like, I mean, you know, Mark was, you know, happy to hook me up with a copy digitally. And
well, it would be weird if I asked you to pay. Like,
hey, will you buy this?
So, like, no, yeah, 20 fucking bucks on the desk.
Yeah. No, yeah, for real. And I was, you know, I was reading through it and I just thought it was so awesome. Cause, like, I mean, there's a lot of scripts that I've been sent before from people that I like that I've just either had to turn down because I wasn't really interested in that kind of story, or I just, you know, wasn't entirely confident that it would be something that I would enjoy drawing, even if it was, like, a story that I enjoyed reading. Mm-hmm. But not only did I enjoy reading it, I was like, I have to draw this character. Like, getting to be involved in this is, like, an opportunity I have to take. So it became more about that than the, like, insecurities going in. And it just kind of overpowered it at a certain point. You know?
Yeah, there was some really awesome, like, sequential art in this that I just adored. You know, it's like I said, it's so hard for me to gush about it because I don't want to spoil anything. But just the way you draw your action scenes is just. Now, Mark, you said you're trying to hit different genres with each issue. How many issues are we looking at, and what type of genres can we expect?
We have three with the Kickstarter. Now, if it does better than getting the goal, we might, you know, see about doing some extra issues as part of a different story. But our first genre is, I just wanted to do a nuts and bolts action comic because I don't actually do a lot of those. Usually there's kind of a subversive element or, you know, me trying to get a little weird or a little vertigo at times. But this was a chance to just try to be as straightforward as possible, but make that good. it is hard to make something like a simple dish very well to the point that it's impressive. And honestly, I knew that was all going to depend on what Max was doing on the page. So I had to like put a good recipe together. And I thought it was good to start with action because, hey, for anyone that jumps on this Kickstarter that hasn't read my previous work, the best way to introduce them to the character is through seeing them go to work. And Jane goes to fucking work on some people in this issue. The fun challenge of writing that issue was, what are like three very different, well, actually four very different fight scenes you can do? You know, you can do the one that's anticlimactic, you can do the one that's brutal, you can do the clever one. It was just a lot of fun to work with that. I was very glad that Max liked one of our ideas, which was doing like a diagram of a beatdown that was going to happen.
Oh, that was
so
cool.
Doing a two-page splash of the actual beatdown, which when writing it, I thought, this is probably too much. He's probably going to say, like, can we condense some of this? And instead, Max was like, I'm going to attack this with the vigor of a knife-wielding maniac myself. He just went at it.
When I got to that part, I was like, okay, you know, are they using this as just a way to kind of just breeze through it to get to the final part, or what's going on? And then I seen that splash page. I was like, we were talking backstage. It's just so gorgeous, Max. You know, what was this experience like for you when you got that script? You know, and working on it on the creative end. You know, did you have like any changes that you wanted to make to any scenes? Like, how did that end up working for you?
You know, I don't remember really needing too many changes. I don't think I even asked for any changes to the script or anything, but there was like a couple of times, like, there was actually one particular page where I showed it to Mike, and he thought that we could condense the information. Basically to like help make a certain character that was entering look a little bit more imposing, right off the bat. And also, you know, at the same time though, I wanted to include this visual gag that Mark set up in the previous page. So I came back to Mike and I was like, well, wait a second, I gotta get this gag in there too. And then he was like, oh, okay, well, do it like this, do it like this. And he, like, he showed me, you know, he sketched it up real quick and it was like awesome. and honestly, the most intimidating part of drawing action sequences is just the continuity of everything and just trying to remember, like when I was drawing the diagram of like who she's gonna fight, when I first drew it, you know, I kind of realized that maybe not everyone would notice this when they read it, but that it was like upside down. Like, the characters that she was about to come at weren't in the positions that I had already kind of placed them in the previous page. And so I flipped the whole thing and like moved it all around. I kept it all in separate little layers because it's like very, it's a very graphic looking page, you know. It was easy to kind of do that, but just kind of making sure that those beats are there, like in between each panel, I have to be able to imagine what movement they did. Like, I always hate it when, no, not hate, but like when I'm reading a comic and someone throws a right hook and then in the next panel they threw another right hook at the next guy. And it's like, could you imagine like watching an anime or something and guys are like, I want them to do something else. And I want it to be something that would flow into what they just did. And so having her just jumping around, you know, like putting a cord around a guy's neck and then throwing the guy, like I want to make sure that she's really putting all of her weight into it, so she's got to jump all the way over him and like do a flip and then use the flip to throw him, you know. Like I was trying to think of that stuff that's in between each panel to help sell the movement. I think I did it.
Yeah, no, I read it.
I would say you did it.
I would agree. Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I've watched anime where they spent like 15 episodes just powering up. So
yeah, fair enough.
Let's actually use this. He called it. Let's use this as an opportunity and not waste any more time and segue over to the campaign and check out the Kickstarter. So we would definitely appreciate that. We're looking at the Relentless Lark. An urban vigilante goes on a genre hopping tour of her hometown to hunt down the copycat impersonating her superhero father. Currently at $5,290 of a $8,000 goal with 207 backers and 15 days left to go. Project we love as well. Congratulations. How are you guys feeling right now?
I'm feeling really good. once you pass the 50% mark and you have half your days ahead of you and you know they're boosting you algorithmically a little bit with that Project We Love tag, you know you could still not fund, but you definitely see the path to success a lot more at that point. It's so nerve-wracking in the first 2 days where you're like, why did we have fewer backers today? Oh, we only had 9. It becomes a bit of a little terror that you get. So far, I'm feeling pretty good. Max, how are you feeling about it?
I was surprised going down. That, yeah, I'm going to like rotate just a little bit. I feel like, so I was surprised at like how fast it was filling up and like how many people there were. Because, oh my God, this lighting is just not working. Okay, we're going to ignore that. Thank you.
I can clean that up post-production, so no worries. It'll, as soon as you turn that camera, it'll just be a perfect transition.
So, like 207 people, that's a lot of people like to support this. You know, I've seen like Kickstarters get funded like fully, you know, with like the same goal with like 100 people before. And like, obviously that I guess on the one hand means that some of those people are getting more money, but on the other hand, it's like 207 people are going to have this in their hands and they're going to be reading it. Mm-hmm. And that's just a really good feeling. It's actually honestly the thing that I'm most excited about, just to be straightforward, is holding it in my own hands, because I've never held a printed comic of my own work before. Yeah,
it's a tremendous feeling. You're gonna be incredibly happy.
That smile
for about 5 seconds.
The new comic smell.
Oh yeah. It's gonna be a great 5 seconds. Like, it's gonna be awesome.
It's that smell is great. Like, I open up the boxes, I get the X-Acto knife, and I go in. I just go pure.
New book that was probably smell. Great for the audio. I love untouched book smell.
So, a quick recap. You know, what are we looking at in terms of the story? I know, previously, you know, she's taking up the mantle of the Lark. But like, what story are we looking at right now in terms of issue one?
Issue one. We just start with her arriving. Her plane touches down in Chicago, and she's there for a 3-day weekend. She's talking on the phone with her boy back in New York, saying, "Hey, it's chill. It's gonna be fine. I'm just gonna wreck shop for a few days," because she's seen reports on the news that there's a vigilante out there wearing the cape and colors that her dad wore, the colors that she's currently wearing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she has a pretty difficult relationship with her father, as we reveal. That didn't come easy to her, getting that approval. In many ways, she's still not sure she ever got that approval before he disappeared. So seeing someone who didn't earn that kind of irks her. So she's looking to go find that guy and rip that cape off his back and then head home with it. Yeah. And it's going to get pretty brutal. In our first issue, we got the action-packed extravaganza from Max. He just kills it. She goes to a mob-owned building because she knows, based on some clues left behind, with an incredibly difficult puzzle to solve. Just so hard. We include a very silly acrostic poem in there. But she goes to a place that she knows that copycat is going to strike, and she goes there to fight her way up the building to meet him halfway through. And then on our second issue, which we have the cover for that underneath this image, this issue is drawn by Kaylee Rowena, and this sees her taking her pursuit to a haunted mansion where a masquerade ball is being held. So we have ghosts of the past, both literal and figurative, going on. So we're going to get into Jane's past. What she has connected to that mansion will be revealed. And we're also going to find out maybe who's underneath the mask of this copycat and what connection he has to her. And that'll lead us into our third issue, drawn by Becca Kubrick, which is more of a psychological thriller, very much a survival piece set during a whiteout blizzard that hits that night. This was a chance for me to show off my love of Jack London stories as a kid. Every year I teach To Build a Fire to my English students, and very inspirational to this story, getting into how hard it simply is to exist in cold weather. Very different. We looked a lot at Steve Lieber's Whiteout for inspiration for that one.
Do you make your students, like, is it extra credit if they like read your books? You're like, hey, you get it. It's like you played to digital, you get at least 5 points extra credit.
It's extra credit if they don't read my books and don't try and talk to me about them. I do a pretty good graphic novel unit, I've heard, where I make my students redraw page studies from the comics we read in there. My students spend 45 minutes having to redraw a page from Persepolis and going, this is so much harder than I thought it would be. There's so much detail I didn't realize. So don't worry, Max. I'm letting the kids know how hard your job is.
That's right here. That's actually kind of mean.
right here is issue one, and let's check out some of these previews. I'm happy you were talking about that puzzle earlier, because that was another part when I was reading the comic. I just thought that was so humorous when she's like, you know, who could this be? And then just it was just like, man, that's perfect. I loved it. Yeah.
Any chance I get to put in like a Batman 66 style gag and not make it intentionally silly, like make it just funny like they mm-hmm. would. It's always a great experience like this. I knew this page would be funny the minute I saw Max's work because, you know, he has that webcomic Rage Room that he's putting out. He's got chapter 2 coming soon, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully
and
at the end of
that book is that book has a lot of like absurdity to it, and it's mm-hmm. very elastic in the cartooning. So knowing that, I was like, okay, this is going to be a killer page. And this punch just makes me laugh every single time, Max. You've got like the anime, yeah. Like the manga lines on there. You know, it's so good for that blur effect.
And I just love the way you capitalize, you know, because it's black and white, but the way you capitalize on the black, like right here, we have the panel bleeding into the metal mesh part of the glass. And I just really thought that was an awesome. And, you know, you see that kind of bleed out throughout the comic. Like right here, you see this item, the enlargement of the item right here, bleed, you know, with the black lining bleed into the paneling again. Mm-hmm. I just really enjoyed how you really utilize those, you know, the blacks and the shading.
And that was Max's idea. He did say that once night fell in the issue, he wanted to do black borders for the gutters because of that impact and that effect. And it was absolutely the right call that he made. Mm-hmm. And he also wanted to add that inset panel of the bomb being shown to just really highlight the gadgetry. Yeah. So a lot of the really inventive stuff in here is Max saying, let me see how I can make the script like even more effective on the page.
Did you do the lettering too? Or
lettering on this is done by Jody Troutman, who I work with on a lot of my books. She does work with publishers like Z2, who primarily do like music-based comics. She's been in web comics for like 20 years. She has the largest font library out of anyone I know alive. So the minute she saw Max's pages, she was like, I can match his line style, the quality of his line, with my work as the letterer. And you can really see that the line work and of a piece.
Hold on. You cut out a little bit there, Mark. What was you saying?
I was saying that Jody really tried to base the work of the lettering off of Max's line work. So there's a little bit of that quality you can see where she says, Dad would say, work smart, not hard, where the letters have a little bit of like a thinner edge to them to mm-hmm. kind of match the quality of the line work there.
No, I really enjoyed that too. And these sound effects are cool. Was that the letterer or was that you, Max?
I was going to say that's the letterer, but doesn't it look like it was supposed to be there? Like,
yeah, it's like it meshes with the style perfectly.
Sometimes I'm not a fan of like sound effects being done with lettering because it can like add a certain layer of cheesiness to things. But like when a letterer, you know, tries their best to like really make it mesh with the artwork that's already there, it can like have quite an effect. And I really like the way it comes off there because it adds even more oomph to mm-hmm. that window breaking than that's already there. So
and then
I really
right
like
here
that.
When this goes off too is such an awesome
like
sound effect
the artwork,
yes,
a little bit.
I love that visual bit you put in there of the lark symbol showing up above it. That's just so good, Max.
I didn't even catch that the first time reading it. That is awesome.
I was wondering how, because like I think I drew that all on one layer, so she probably had to like select this bomb and like put the text. That's cool.
And then right here was another awesome sequence where you see the fight sequence in darkness. Like, how and it's like within like a infrared like UI. Like, how was this like designed? Like, how did that actually look script wise? And then how did that look designing it? Because it seems like it would be such a complex idea to put on paper.
Here's the disparity between being the writer and being the artist. I said, Max, maybe put a heads up display in there. And Max is like, all right, I'll do this hard work, boss.
Cause you'd like,
I wanted to show all the things that like she's damaging. Both so that I feel like just, I sort of headcanned a little bit so that she's, you know, not trying to like lethally kill them. Right. But she is trying to fuck them up. I mean, you see like the guy on the third panel, or no, sorry, the fourth panel there. I mean, you know, that's a bad concussion. That's no good. but you know, she's very thorough, and I wanted that to show through in, like, I wanted it to seem like each blow was like a surgical, tactical decision, and not just like she's flailing wildly, you know, attacking. I wanted it to seem like she really thought of each thing she was going to do before she even did it, which we do show pretty well in that double page spread later with the diagram beforehand. But this one, it's just kind of in the moment, but I still wanted to show that thought process a little bit. And I feel like that UI in her lenses is kind of part of that.
And I love the heart monitor, like, right here, too. So, like, not only are you seeing, like, the injuries, like the knee snapping and the nads getting stomped on, but you see their heart rate when it's happening.
Yeah, they're freaking out.
There's a line on a later page where Jane's observing some goons who don't know that they're about to get their life ruined. And they say something like, oh, if you're scared, just lay down after the first hit. The Lark never follows up for a second one if you don't get up. And I feel like Max really took that to heart. Like, every single one of these hits is meant to be the first and the last one that occurs.
Yeah, like, she wants to be done with them as quick as possible.
Yeah, she's not like Daredevil, where she's going to be getting up and, like, fighting for 5 minutes, one guy.
Yeah, with the one guy in a hallway.
There's such an amazing interaction, too, after that. That was just so humorous that I think, like, after, like, seeing this and hearing, like, what went into the thought process, it just pans out so much more, like, in a humorous manner. So, yeah, I don't want to spoil anything. We'll talk after.
I won't spoil the gag, but
let's go ahead and check out some of these add-ons and rewards. So right now, you guys can get issue one digitally for $5 for the PDF. You pledge $12 or more, get issues 1 through 3, all digital. We have a relentless archive, so you can get issues 1 through 3 and then the digital archive. What's all going to be involved in this archive?
I give way too much value for my rewards. I say that because I want people to read my books, which means if you're able to, if you've already made your money on something, you got to give it for less in the next campaign so that people can jump on. So in here, it's a big catch-up reward tier. I intend for these three issues to stand totally on their own. Someone should be able to read all three of them and enjoy them and have no issues. But if they want to know everything, we've got in this archive a prequel one-shot that I worked on with a cartoonist named Colt Hoskins called Birthday Wishes, which I would pitch to you as it's kind of a spin on The Killing Joke, except Batgirl's the main character, and it don't end like
that. Ooh.
So it's not nearly as nasty, but it's very much like, hey, what would it feel like to actually focus on that character instead and just not be anywhere near as mean or gross? So we kind of took that as like a reclamation project. And then they can also get the entire first volume of Young Offenders. That's 128-page paperback. Of course, it's a digital copy here. We've got the all three issues, plus a new prologue in there, and all our backup stories. And I also had a digital copy donated of Deadly Living from Dauntless Stories by my friend Marcus Jimenez, who runs that operation. So this is hundreds of pages of comics for $16.
Excuse me. Wow, that is one hell of a bargain. We have
a deal.
Yeah, and that's what, $4 more than issue 1 through 3.
Yep. I want people to be able to read. You know, you got to give them the chance to jump on, because they might come back for a later campaign and say, "Hey, I like that digital comic. I want to get that in print next time." I've seen it happen a few times.
Speaking of print, you can get issues 1 through 3, $20. That is such a bargain. Three physical comics. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, and that includes shipping in the United States. So if you live in the U.S., there's no extra charge on top of that. That's inclusive.
Wow.
Again, I want to give a good deal, and maybe I would fund a lot quicker if I didn't, but it is what it is.
We have at 25 or more, The Lark Knight, so grab issues 1 through 3, print and digital with the prequel one-shot as well. So that's going to be also print. How many pages is that?
That one shot is a 25-page story, and I think we had about 3-ish pages of back matter. I always try to include process material in my books when I'm able to. We might not be able to with this current series, but I might even see about printing a little side zine to go with it at some point.
Okay.
Because it's fun when you can show people how the sausage gets made. Yeah, I know that I learned how to write comics from opening up like a year one paperback and seeing Frank Miller's script pages in the back next to the pages in pencil and realizing, oh, you can just tell someone much more talented than you to draw that. yeah, I could tell David Mazzucchelli what to draw. That's fucking easy.
Yeah.
Now, granted, Frank Miller is Frank Miller, so that's mm-hmm. a little bit different. He was very talented in his own right.
Yeah, he could draw too.
Yeah, you know, he should try drawing Batman. I bet he'd do a good job.
We have at the $30 or more the retail pack, so you can get 3 issues each of the Relentless Lark issue 1 through 3 for resale. $30, one hell of a price. We have 200 or more. Get your ad in this comic. Where's this ad going to be at? Are we looking at like a front page, middle, or back?
Back cover.
Back cover. Let's go. So you get the whole back cover. That is one hell of a deal.
I like having these in there. I usually, with my previous books, I will reach out to any friends I have who are going to launch a Kickstarter or just like started selling a book through their online shop. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, please put your book in here because we got to support each other where we can. And in this case here, I'm definitely saying, support me a little bit more. And then this may in turn support you as well.
And that's on issues 1 through 3, or is it just on 1?
That's issues 1 through 3. So we've had one of those go already. So issue 1 has been claimed already. Oh. So now it's going to be issue 2 next and then 3.
Okay.
Do I happen to know whose project is on there? I mean, actually, I don't know if you would know that I would know. Who is it?
That is actually an interesting. It's a fellow who's running a new online retailer. He asked me if it was okay, and I made sure to check that his business was on the up and up. You know, so that's a little bit of a change of pace. But for the most part, these are going to be from other comics creators.
So it looks like go ahead.
Oh yeah, I was going to explain this tier, which is me greatly undervaluing my work. It's a co-writer tier. Hey, give me $300. I will co-write an issue of a comic with you. Up to 28 pages. No adult content. Like, I'll say no to some stuff. You know, I can't have my name on everything. I saw Christopher Sabella do one of these on a campaign of his. And he's a writer I really respect. Mm-hmm. And I figured that was a good idea to throw it in there because it gives me a chance to maybe work with some people who want to make something but don't really know how to execute it the way they want to. I really enjoy writing with other people. I've co-written a few things recently. I wrapped my first major graphic novel last year, and it was basically like co-writing at points with my artist that I was collaborating with. So I really like that experience, and I figured, hey, undersell yourself, but also help fund the book in the process.
Mm-hmm.
I've had one of those go so far. Yeah.
Mark, when you said wrapped, I was about to throw down a beat. I was going to be like, all right, let's get it going. And then we have, that's it. That's all gone. So you guys have one last chance to get an opportunity to have Mark help you co-write this for $300. And you still get issues 1 through 3 print and the Lark birthday wish as well. And then right here, it looks like, do we have any add-ons too?
We do have an add-on. All 3 of our artists, so Max included, have offered to draw 5 sketch cards for backers as an add-on.
Okay.
Those are just $25 each. So it's a chance to get some custom art, not break mm-hmm. your bank at the same time. And it's going to be cool. It's going to have their cover on the back, and then on the front is going to be the sketch portion. So you'll have that to be able to put on your desk. I know I like to display sketch cards because when I was broke going to comic shows at like 18 and 19, I could only afford a sketch card. I was mm-hmm. like, hey man, could you please draw me like Nexus or Madman here? And you know, they would do that. And it was always such a nice thing to have.
Mm-hmm. No, that is awesome. Everyone watching, right here is the link. Be sure to check it out and back if you can. Once again, if you can't back, put that on Twitter or Facebook. It is 100% free to do so. And getting as many eyes on this project as possible is definitely what we're trying to achieve here. So, Mark, Max, after going through the Kickstarter, what would you guys like to say to anyone who might be on the fence about backing if you just had a few seconds to kind of just convince them otherwise?
My sell for them would be just back for the first issue because we finished that already. We're going to deliver that as soon as the campaign ends. So if we fund, that thing's going out to you right away. And you'll immediately think, God damn it, I should have backed for all of these. Because this first issue is all killer, no filler. And if we don't fund, you lose nothing. So this is basically Pascal's wager right now, like a big philosophy concept of you have nothing to lose, but everything to gain for just $5. And every dollar genuinely helps.
I guess for me, it would probably be... it'd be a little bit of a wager here, but... I could say, hey, do you like my art? Do you want to have a book full of it? And do you want to be one of the only people to have my first comic in your hands, so that in, I don't know, however many years down the road, whenever DC lets me draw Green Arrow or Batman or something, a good five or so, they can say that they had my work first. Mm-hmm. They were on the train already. And same goes for Mark, really. I mean, just having our work is really just a blessing for you. So you should do it.
You're so lucky, Mark. Yeah. Hey, DC, if you're watching... If you're watching, sign Max. You heard it here first on Keeping It Geekly. We're making it happen. thank you both so much for an awesome time. What else is up your sleeves for 2023, though? I know, Mark, you said you have issues 2 and 3 of this yet to create, but is there any other stories outside the Relentless Lark that you're working on?
I have a graphic novel that I wrote for a publisher and finished last year that just wrapped art and is set currently for summer this year. I can't say what it is. I can't say where it is. I can't even say anything about it besides what I just said. So pay attention, I guess.
Publishers in the same room, like, say, got it in my sights.
Yeah, it's on me. I can say it's a middle grade graphic novel. So this one's for kids. Very different from what we got here, which is not like the most inappropriate book. There's maybe one S word in it.
Is it harder writing for kids?
Incredibly harder because you do end up feeling a responsibility to not accidentally give any bad messaging. Like you do feel responsibility with adults. I'm like, I don't know, man, if you take something bad from this, that's on you. You can be one of those people that watched Breaking Bad and thought it looked fun. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, man, do you
yeah
Max, what do you got coming up?
What do I got coming up? Right. So hopefully by the end of this month or early next month, chapter 2 of Rage Room will release on Tapas. The only thing that's really holding it back is that I've got a trailer for it that's being worked on by a buddy of mine. You can probably find them on Twitter at, I don't want to like totally botch this, like Bungungus Gungle Dungle. Bingus, they go by, you know, they're Bingus, you know, that's the thing. You know, it's going to be an awesome trailer. I want it to be like a trailer that feels professional, just so that I can put that out alongside the chapter to also advertise the first one. And I'll be working on chapter 3 this year, but I can't confirm when I'll have that out. However, there's something else I'm working on. It's a pitch. I'm not going to say what the project is or even where we're pitching it just yet. You know, I don't want to like jump the gun on this too early, but I'm working with Anas Abdulhaq, if you've heard of him before.
Yeah. Anas is my dude. Yeah.
Oh yeah, dude. So we're working on something together. It's actually, it's a passion project of mine. You know, we were talking to each other just about like, you know, working together at some point. He threw a few of his ideas my way and then asked if I had any. And I was like, actually, I do have this one. It's an idea that I've had since I was like in high school. You know, I'm 24 now. So that was a while ago.
I'm like 33 and just hearing you say that makes me depressed. I'm like, man, my bag is already going
so
out.
So long ago.
The only thing I'll say is that it's a horror story. Mm-hmm. But it has like a strong family theme to it. Sort of like a legacy thing going on, a sort of a generational trauma type of thing. So
Anas always
peeled.
Is writing trauma, we'll but I'm happy to see him. I'm happy to see him dive into horror. And, you know,
It's gonna be great. I mean, because honestly, the thing about it is that it's this story that like I've always wanted to do, but since I've been doing Rage Room, and I also want to like try to pencil a bunch of people's work. You know, they're writing and all that stuff. I didn't know if I'd have time to write it. So basically I'm handing the basic synopsis over to Anas and then he's going to write the hell out of it. And then I'm going to draw. I basically described it as like, I put up the scaffolding. He's going to build the house and then I'll do the interior decorating. So that's how we're kind of doing it. So just keep your peepers peeled. The two of us will say something about it in probably within the next couple months.
Oh my God. I just had Anas and Dennis on literally like 2 weeks ago, I think, for Ethris. Awesome. Yeah. Oh, dude. Holy crap. That is so cool.
Oh, Dennis is cool too. Yeah. No, I'm excited for Ethris.
Oh my gosh. Oh, this is such a small world. Mark, Max, thank you both for swinging by. Before I let you two go, I always love asking for a little bit of advice for anyone who might be new listening that wants to get into creating comics. So for anyone that's listening and kind of just struggling getting going, what advice would you offer them as motivation to kind of help them get their journey started?
If you're a writer, start small. Write something that's 5 pages. Write something that's 8 pages. Try to really spend your time revising it. Think about your page turns. Think about the page as a unit of story. And just try to tell a good story with an impactful ending in a small amount of space. And then skip fast food for like 4 months.
I can't do it.
Don't go out for a bit. Put that money that you would have done like other things with in your savings and collect money for a page rate. Mm-hmm. And then look for someone who you think is really talented that makes the kind of comics that you want to read and ask them if they would be able to draw your script for money. And then that will teach you a whole lot because they might ask you some questions saying, hey, there's like 3 actions in one panel and you describe the character smiling, but he's supposed to be turned away from the reader. Like, how do I, you know, these are the things that you'll iron out in this process. Mm-hmm. And it is so much easier to iron out in a small amount of space as opposed to your 200-page graphic novel that you wrote.
Yeah.
That's later. That's later. Go to that later. You can get someone to commit to 5. 5 ain't that much.
And that's a whole lot of fast food you're not eating for a graphic novel, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you go like 2-3 times a day. You eat McDonald's breakfast, McDonald's lunch, McDonald's dinner, you know?
You can see the gut that much, man. But Max, what about you? For anyone looking to get into the art side of things, you know, as an artist, what would you suggest, you know, they start working on?
Well, first of all, I'll say that you do not have to go to art school like I did. I mean, it's one of the ways to do it. I mean, I think it was valuable to have the connections that I made, but ultimately you can learn on your own or through friends. If you have any artist friends, ask them for some advice here and there and be open to it. Don't, you know, I think a lot of times when artists get criticisms, you know, obviously it's not great to get them unwelcomed, but like if you're looking for it, just be receptive because they're not always going to necessarily see your vision. And what people are trying to do is help you see it through. So just, you know, be receptive to that, but don't, you know, feel like you're like being restricted at all if someone tells you to do this or do that. But when it comes to getting into comics, the main thing, honestly, is to have fun with it. Recognize the amount of time you're going to need to draw pages. It's a lot of time. Like I usually do like a whole page, just it'll take me like a day. And so that part of it is a huge commitment. So it's definitely a big time commitment. You're probably going to have to play less video games and watch less movies. But you can definitely listen to a lot more podcasts because of it. So there's that. Honestly, yeah, just have fun with it and see where it goes. And like, first and foremost is that you want to be making something that you enjoy and that you would want to read. You don't want to make something just because you think it might have some special gift for you by the end where you get your dream job and move to LA or whatever. Like, don't view it that way. You know, I mean, actually really just getting into art in general, don't view it as something that you're going to like become this huge success with. It's not because you can't, it's just because that's not the point. You know, if you can and you can turn it into your livelihood, that's great. But if you love it, you'll do it. That's what I've learned. That's all
I think that's great advice. You know, finding something that you love to do is going to help you carry you through the harder times when you don't want to do it. Because, I mean, let's all face it. Like, there's been times we woke up and we're like, oh, we got to do this. Like, I just want to chill today. I want to sleep in today. You know, having that love and that passion fuels you to get up. And you're like, no, this needs to, I'm the reason this is getting done today. Like,
exactly. Great,
great advice. Mark, Max, thank you both for swinging by, breaking down the Relentless Lark and everything in between. Everyone watching, this is New Comic Book Day. You need to treat yourself to this book. Be sure to at least get the digital. Get digital one. Treat yourself. Once you get it, you're going to wish you got issue 2 and 3. For anyone wishing they could, is there going to be a storefront where they can order it digitally or anything in the future?
Once we have fulfilled the campaign, I never like to put anything up for sale digitally before a campaign's fulfilled because I know some people really wait to read it until they get the print copy.
Yeah.
So it's after that point that it will absolutely go into my storefront. WeekendWarriorComics.com is the name of that. And hey, Max is going to have some comps. So you might be able to track him down at a show and say, hey, please, in exchange for money, can I have this comic? And he'll he'll tell you, you know.
This year I want to try to get a table going at like at least one convention. I haven't done it yet. So if you see me there, wherever it may be, I'll definitely have some copies on the table for you.
I'm actually going to my first convention this year. I want to say it is Terrificon or Fantasticon in Toledo. I'm very excited because, you know, interviewing, like, you want to go to that. You want to interview people live. You want to see the artist, the writer, creative team live. It's such a good experience. So I can't, you know, being the artist, like, that's, you know, Art Alley's, like, that's your home, right? Like, no, that is awesome. Thank you, too, for swinging
by. It's a fun experience, Max. You're going to enjoy it.
Oh, I know. I can't wait.
Real quick, for you as well, Max, where can people find you if they're interested in commissioning you?
Oh, okay. So I am most active on Twitter, but I'm also on Instagram and TikTok. They're all the same at just Max Pinelli Art. And I actually have it on my name here. I just figured I'd throw it in there. And I also have a email specifically for business inquiries, maxpinelliartist@gmail.com. I have a website, although I am thinking of making a new one. It's through Wix, and if you want to put your domain on it, you got to give them way too much money a month, and there's cheaper places to do it. So I'm going to put that one on the back burner. The link's in my bios, though, if you ever want to check it out. I think it looks nice. I just don't really like the name of it. But yeah, so mostly, yeah, you can find me on those social media platforms and just DM me, throw me a message.
All right, let's go.
You still have commissions up, don't you? I saw you had that sheet up the other day, right?
Yeah, I did a couple. So there's still out of the 10 slots, like 8 left if anyone wants to get one.
Let's go.
Anyone watching, you got to get on that. You saw the preview pages.
They're gorgeous. Yeah, no, I had a chance to read it, and the interiors are gorgeous. So you are missing out if you're not capitalizing on that as well. Mark, Max, thank you both for swinging by. Everyone watching, this has been a lovely Wednesday. Hope you have an awesome one, but most importantly, keep it geekly.